have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. We've been having such an interesting conversation on News on the Flip Side. The we've decided to continue it and have it really serve as our Global Newsmaker Focus program. Now, my wonderful Vernell, who's in the room, what a bright lady. We'd love to have her join us. We just called, and you might have been on another line at the time. But again, I'm going to periodically melt in the room. We'd love to have you join us for now. She's my co-host. What a brilliant lady. She's a top-notch paralegal and administrator. She's one very bright, brilliant young lady. Now, the panel members tonight are Joe Montaldo, Stephanie Benetti, co-hosts of News on the Flip Side and News on the Flip Side Light. Wonderful programs. News on the Flip Side, Saturday evening from, my time, it would be from 5 to 8 Eastern Time. It is News on the Flip Side Saturday nights. It would be, let's see, from 7 to 11 Eastern. And their new program, News on the Flip Side Light, a one-hour version, on Thursday nights. Thursday nights, when is that, Joe? Is that 7 Central?
Yeah, 7 Central, 1 hour. That's all we do, guys, 1 hour on Thursdays.
Outstanding program, as is their Saturday broadcast. Also joining us, Glenn, a brilliant scientist and entrepreneur from Oklahoma, and our favorite police officer, Bud, from New Jersey. And, of course, we have another police officer who may be listening. That would be Stephanie's father, retired police officer. So, okay, the first topic of discussion.
What's y'all going with? Stephanie said she was going with the topic.
Well, it's
the OCD
program. Let her do her thing.
Well, you know what? I've got another. You know, we just mentioned law enforcement and concerns. I thought this was an interesting article. It's from Wall Street Journal, yesterday, Friday the 21st. NSA chief warns of dramatic cyber attack by, and it's a beautiful Irish name too, by Siobhan, I believe it is, S-I-O-B-H-A-N, pardon me, Gorman. Siobhan Gorman, I may have mispronounced your beautiful Irish name. Anyway, reading the text, the director of the National Security Agency issued a warning Thursday about cyber threats emerging from other countries against networks running critical U.S. infrastructure systems. Admiral Michael Rogers said he expects a major cyber attack against the U.S. in the next decade. It's only a matter of the when, not the if, that we are going to see something dramatic, he said. His testimony Thursday at a House Intelligence Committee hearing was the most specific public warning from the government to date about the likelihood of major attack, and included a candid acknowledgement that the U.S. isn't yet prepared to manage the threat, end quote. And further quoting Admiral Rogers, let me see here, pardon me, Admiral Rogers highlighted several threats emerging that will become significant problems in the coming year. At the top of his list are nation states, including China and one or two others, the U.S. officials maintaining. Focus the program of Dr. Muccitelli. That was fascinating. And, you know, Joe and Steph in their program have often referenced the different recent attacks by Chinese and Russian parties regarding security as to also the Chinese as to companies and their information, their proprietary information. What do you think, guys? Are you really worried about our infrastructure being threatened this way by cyber attacks?
If they screw up my internet, I'm coming for them, is all I got to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are vulnerable. There's no doubt. Our infrastructure is definitely vulnerable and needs to be updated quickly, especially places like New York and other places. They have vulnerable electrical grids, vulnerable train grids. It's something they need to work on hardcore. In the South, it's a little less. We don't have it, but we have nuclear power plants that you have to worry about as well. So I think we need to get a grip on it. You know what? I didn't understand, and I probably even shouldn't even say this on the air, but, you know, these guys were flying planes into buildings. Why didn't they fly one into a nuclear power plant somewhere? Thank God they didn't think about that, huh? I know.
Why not the Hoover Dam?
Yeah, why not the Hoover Dam? There was lots of better targets. I know the Twin Towers served to be... really, if you wanted to go for the kill ratio, those were not the best bang for the buck. No, if you wanted to go for trying to really harm the country, it really harmed New York. It just pissed the country off is what it did. The New Yorkers are the one that had to deal with the shock and the pain and the awe and everything else. That wasn't so much us. That was them. Or anybody who had any loved ones in the towers. Which, fortunately, I didn't. I gotta say, I was stunned when I seen that plane fly into the tower. I was like, you're shitting me, right? One's on fire and the other one... Because right as I walked in the house, you know, I got the call, so I came home and the tower's all burning. The one's burning. And while I'm watching it, I was like, son of a bitch. Can't believe I seen that alive. Yeah, that was insane.
Those terrorist acts are always so terrible. Now, Stephanie, honey, are you still on the line? You know, you're one very brave lady. You very bravely overcame the effects there of Hurricane Sandy. Now, where you live in Staten Island, you were so in such close proximity. It must have been a traumatic thing to observe. Also, and I don't mean to be gross here, but I know several New Yorkers who told me that they could smell death in the area.
You're yummy.
Yes. And just to that effect, I watched the World Trade Center burning for 90 days right from my household. You talk about smelling death, like, that was horrific. And what is it, like 10 miles away from me in the car, 20 minutes or what have you? So,
Well, America has wonderfully overcome that shock, and New Yorkers are such a brave group. Stephanie, I know something about the reconstruction there of the World Trade Center site. We should discuss that. Even their new subway there.
But who the hell would work there? I mean, if you gave me a job right now saying, you know what, Stephanie, and it's not even unheard of, like $140,000, go work there, I'm not really sure I would. And I know the place. I've known it my whole life. I know exactly. You know, I was there about 2 weeks before because there was some agency I had to go and what have you. And I went there, and I have an envelope that was supposed to go there, but it never did because of what happened afterwards. But I'm not really sure. Like, I know you guys, get over it in New York. It's kind of hard. It's something that, you destroyed our life, and we don't forget it, and it's really upsetting to New Yorkers. And there are so many people that live in the country and go, oh, give me a break, get over it. You can't get over it because visibly, you destroyed our skyline, but it's more than that. It's like there were so many financial companies in that place, and I'm a financial person in my background, and
right.
I actually know a lot of people who died. I went to high school with. Like, it's like a sad story in itself when you talk about that, and it sits really badly in say New Yorkers' view. Like, you can't even comprehend. And I know there's tragedies everywhere, but come on, people. Two buildings just imploding and just people jumping out. You know, I have a friend of mine who worked across the street who was sending me text message photos of people jumping out the windows as it was happening, let alone I seeing the second plane just hit the building standing there downtown. And when you talk about this stuff, it really hits home because it's like, who jumped out that window and their life they felt was better doing that? That's their alternative than dying in the building. And it's really crazy, but all right, let's let that sadness go. But really, from New York, no. We're not over that in any way, shape, or form. And, yeah, the terrorist thing, yeah, it still holds true. And we have a poll, Joe. I think we talked about, do you feel safe? And my answer was no, and your answer was yes, you do. Yeah, because we're, and now we have this. I took a photo recently of the new Freedom Tower, and
It's gorgeous.
It is pretty.
No, but I wouldn't step a foot in there. Like, honestly?
Well, I would go if I came to New York. I would want you to take me and show me at the tower. Out of respect for all the people who died.
Mm-mm. Nope.
I like to say something on that.
Yeah.
It's just like Pearl Harbor. You're never going to forget back in 9/11 or Pearl Harbor. We never forgot either one. And people will never forget. It's like what the Japanese said one time, you just woke up the sleeping giant. And that's exactly what they did after 9/11. Yeah, when the New Yorkers got together and did everything, and moniteurs across the country came to assist, it woke up the sleeping giant, and then the military started getting the gear and went from there. So we're never, never going to forget either one.
No, we all
have
to
outdate
the market.
Way attitude.
Mm-hmm. Wait. The fact that I could see it and smell it from my house, and that's, it's like I watched it. I could sit on my front porch and just watch the burning. It's so upsetting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, so I think I'm about, if 20 minutes, so what do we say, 20 minutes miles wide? I would say like 10 miles, which is really not far. That's what I'm looking at from my porch, and I'm looking at it thinking to myself, oh my God, like, and for 90 days, so think about 3 months of watching this shit burn, and people's remains are burning, and the whole, New York is a target by far, and I feel bad for New York in that way, and I don't think it's ever going to change, you know? It's like, you know, COP.
Once all Latinos move up there, it won't be a target.
COP, we have this New Jersey thing, you know, I work there, and I know a bit. I got to be honest with you, I've always been a New York person, and I've really never veered from it or what have you. And now I'm in New Jersey, and now I have a different perspective from New York to New Jersey, but
New Jersey is in the middle of it. You know, like New York, as you said, well, I knew it for years, and New York is a target, you know, the UN, the Twin Towers, or whatever.
Well, they had tried to blow
up. Then you got Washington, and then New Jersey's in the middle, so we're caught in the middle of this. So whatever happens, like a crash in Pennsylvania, all right, that plane was heading for Washington, but it crashed right about, say, 40 miles from where I'm at. You know, it could have came over here in Jersey and crashed over here. So we're caught in the middle of this thing, too. That's why they alerted all the military from McGuire, Fort Dix, Lake Hurst, and all, and Cape May Coast Guard.
I think it was shot down.
That's what I was trying to think about, too.
Well, you know, this is probably a prosaic question, but I noticed after it occurred that New York, Boston, Washington, all were following very strict protocols with people entering the large buildings. I hope they're still doing that. I wish they did that more in the West.
I don't know if there's something that's always been bothering me. I was up there for a couple of days to give them a hand. But later I found out that some of them buildings in New York was an implosion, not explosion. And it happened after the other buildings came down. And then they're thinking, okay, somebody had to set something inside the building to make it blow up that way. And then everybody was pointing fingers. Because if the planes hit the Twin Towers, okay, that took that out. But right after that, even the firemen and police up there said, wait a minute, here's explosions, but it was in explosions. Everything's blown in, not out. And they were still trying to figure out what caused that, but besides somebody putting dynamite, who did it? So there was a conspiracy there. I think it was building number 11 or something like that. So they're still investigating that.
That's a fascinating point. But now New York, the economy there is really back on track, and the New Yorkers certainly showed a great deal of solidarity.
Hmm.
The nation did too, of course, to try to overcome that world Trade Center disaster.
I say we give Manhattan back to the Indians.
Leave.
No, you use keep it. We don't want used ground no more.
Since they keep that old dirty stuff, it ain't worth having anymore.
No, we don't want that. It's all contaminated
all right, wait,
now.
Let's talk about this. Al Sharpton attacks the New York Times with a story on his unpaid taxes. And it goes on to say, let's see, the Reverend Al Sharpton held a fiery and extensive news conference Wednesday morning to push back against the New York Times, basically exposing him. So it says, for a full 45 minutes, the veteran civil rights leader of MSNBC has, talked about a story which he had $4.5 million tax liens. I mean, really, like, it's incredible when you talk about 4.5. We're not talking about like $2,000 here, people. $4.5 million in taxes, tax liens placed against him. And it goes, Sharpton characterized the report as both being inaccurate and politically motivated before, making an abrupt exit from the event. So not only did you $4.5 million, and then you become obnoxious and you leave the whole conversation. So what do you guys think about that?
That sounds like Al Sharpton to me, loser.
Nah, it sounds like you're guilty.
Well, he is
guilty. The New York Times is producing effective news coverage of a truly newsworthy matter. Mm-hmm.
Top, Glenn?
That's pretty outrageous.
$4.5 million? Give me a break. So ridiculous.
I think he owed $5 million, didn't he?
I don't know. It just doesn't matter. And not even that, guys. He left it abruptly. Like, so, it, I'm really a literal person. I read every single word. And when I read things like this, and it says he did this and he left abruptly, that means the world to me, because I read into that, like, I could actually visualize you just going, whatever, and I gotta go, I don't want to talk about this anymore, end of story, and that's what you did. And when you do that, you're actually illustrating who you are as a person and demonstrating also that you're guilty of what you're being accused for, because if not, you'd be willing to speak and say, like, this, that, whatever, and people, you know, what have you. But when you act abruptly, that's an indication to me. And anyone who poses anything publicly in such an abrupt manner, it tells me that guilty, guilty, guilty. So he's caught. He's a loser. He's a bobblehead loser. No, really. He lost his weight and whatever. He's got... To me, he's just a face that, whatever.
He had a news program on MSNBC. I forget the name of it. He did. He was featured as a host of an MSNBC news program.
Yeah,
let me get the name
on
there.
That up too.
MSNBC.
MSNBC.
I screwed that up myself. I mean,
they used to be such a good news station. Now they're such a... Liberal, just let me just whatever liberals say, that's what we're going to tell you is the truth now.
Oh, here it is, Politics Nation with Al Sharpton on MSNBC. Thank you, Joe. That is good. Interesting comment, though, Stephanie. I know that is really, that's a joke. That's such a newsworthy item. Of course it has to be mentioned.
Yeah. It's crazy. Something just popped up flat on the screen.
If I need to continue, I will. Patrice.
Well, I was going to say, Tom Ufert, in his interview about 2 weeks ago, author and political commentator Tom Ufert has an interesting chapter in his book, Political Crafts, regarding the importance of our public officials conforming to a particular or following a certain standard, an ethical standard that all public servants should follow. And it sounds to me as though perhaps Reverend Sharpton is missing a few key points there.
That's because that's fine. He is missing. He's in that case. Is what he is.
He's missing something.
He went wackadoodle a long time ago, I think, man.
How do you think the pal Brock will bail him out of his tax problems?
He might. I've often wondered if whatchamacallit. Oh, I forgot what I was going to say. Damn, my brain went dead right in the middle of it.
Yeah, good radio host.
Well, you guys have been speaking for 4 hours.
Well, we've been speaking probably 5 hours, right, Joe? Or 5.5 hours.
Oh, yeah, we was on the phone for at least an hour and a half before we got on the on the show tonight, yeah.
I know.
So, Joe,
pardon my interruption. I noticed in the Wall Street Journal from today, business and finance section, an article, oil boom returns to Gulf after spill, quoting aboard the Olympus platform, Gulf of Mexico, 4 years after the Deepwater Horizon disaster, giant new oil projects are returning to the Gulf, bigger and more expensive than ever, end quote, by Daniel Gilbert, Amy Harder, and Justin Scheck. And they were mentioning that Olympus platform, I guess the owner is Royal Dutch Shell, PLC, and it's located 130 miles off the Louisiana coast, and it's described as larger than a New York City block and weighing more than an aircraft carrier, end quote. Joe, are you hearing more about a resurgence there and oil boom in Louisiana?
They keep it out of the press as much as possible because they don't want people to know about it. And because people are still sketchy over, excuse me, the BP thing. So people are just kind of, you know, want to leave us alone. Don't put no more rigs anywhere. But we have been seeing the amount of jackup rigs doubling and tripling down here. You see a lot of them. You know, when you're crossing, when you're driving, there's bridges everywhere. And when you're crossing in the coastal and the continental bridges and stuff like that on Mississippi, you'll from time to time see jackup rigs being brought out to the Gulf. And lately you've been seeing a lot of them. So they went ahead and opened it back up. And what happened is they just, you know, sent enough money to grease the right politicians' hands, and now it's open. But once it becomes really public, that may change because last time they were going to open them, they had sold some leases, some big leases, and it leaked into the press, and everybody went crazy, and then they kind of put it on hold for a while. So maybe this is just a pickup from there. We got to have the oil, though, and it's pretty cheap in the Gulf, so might as well get it while we can. And it benefits the state. But Louisiana's been moving slowly and surely away from gas for its number one export.
That's intriguing. I forgot, as this article notes, that indeed the Gulf is a major source of our U.S. energy. Very intriguing. Louisiana is such an important state, and New Orleans, such a wonderful port, a very major port.
Yeah, it feeds the heartland and part of the West Coast and even part of the East Coast. That's where all the good stuff comes in at. For some reason, I guess because it's in the middle of the country, the New York Harbor and even the Miamis are pretty much local range. When I mean local range, within, you know, 500 or 600 miles of the port. Same thing with the L.A. ports and you know, Seattle ports and all. There are local ports, but New Orleans ports are actually quite a bit bigger. You know, everything coming and going out of the Mississippi River comes through there. Everything goes all the way up to, what, St. Louis and everything along the way in between. And they go a little further than St. Louis, but really, once you get to St. Louis, the size of the ship drops dramatically. What's up? Where's my perfect co-host at tonight?
I'm right here.
What's up, co-host?
What do you want?
I was just saying, good job. That's all I was saying.
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, can we discuss technology here? Let me see. This also is from the Marketplace, today's Wall Street Journal. Pentagon criticizes contractors' R&D by Doug Cameron and Julian E. Barnes, quoting, to combat emerging threats, the Pentagon wants to spend more of its budget on new technologies from beyond its traditional supplier base, posing a challenge for established defense contractors. And further down, this is kind of interesting. Let me further quote. Just two more paragraphs. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said much of the best technology coveted by the Pentagon lies outside the department and its main suppliers. In a speech this past weekend, he outlined a new defense innovation initiative designed to identify investment priorities in areas including robots and drones that can act more autonomously, data systems that can improve surveillance and reconnaissance, and advanced manufacturing techniques such as 3D printing, end quote. There's an interesting picture here of a Chinese J-31 stealth fighter. And then just the last quote, because I thought it was really very, very interesting, this being, let's see, and quoting directly again, in recent months, the Pentagon officials have said that a new wave of innovation is needed to counter China's heavy military spending, notably in stealth fighter jets and long-range missiles that could threaten the U.S. Navy. Officials also are wary of new Russian tactics and the acquisition of precision weaponry by militant groups, end quote. Well, that's interesting. You hear about, well, of course, the Soviets have also major accomplishments regarding space, and China, too, has been in that field now for a while. What do you think on that? It's interesting.
It's kind of nerve-wracking, actually.
Yes, indeed it is. Mm-hmm.
China was in it. Now, it was funny. I was watching China's new billion-dollar stealth plane. Well, we don't need radar to find it. The smoke plume is so black you can see it coming from miles. And they're not going to be able to get their hands on those kind of engines from Boeing or any of those companies or Rolls-Royce. They're not going to sell them to them because, you know, they're for Allied planes only. So there's some technologies we do sell to, and we do sell a lot. Most people don't realize a good chunk of Russia's military equipment and computer hardware comes from us. Just like we were buying rockets and stuff from them to launch into space, they were buying tech from us. A good part of it, so. They got to watch that if they want to go start in wars with us. Refitting's a bitch in the middle of a war. And personally, I think Europe could take Russia without our help. I got to be honest about it.
I agree with you. And, you know, it's funny, in an unrelated article elsewhere in the journal, they were mentioning that the Peshmerga fighters, those brave fighters, the Kurdish fighters, are requesting the U.S. a more advanced weapon technology. I wish I had the article with me right now. I don't. I had easy access. But, you know, those Peshmerga, I know we had a discussion about 3 weeks ago on some of the female fighters in that force, really are remarkable. They're certainly a wonderful addition to the fight against ISIS.
Well, they're definitely tough, and they don't seem to be taking any BS. So if they're going to win that region back, that's how it's going to have to be. I'm just hoping, you know, that we do back them and we don't let them all go get killed because we want to be stingy or greedy. You know, sometimes America chooses the wrong time to skimp, like with Ambassador Stevens. Sometimes we need to spend the money instead of being – I mean, there's lots of places we can skimp. But where there's American lives involved, we should or anybody's lives involved, really, we should never be skimping.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, guys, there's one thing I wanted to research here. I don't know, Joe, take the floor for about 2 minutes. There's one really interesting article I've got to note.
No, go grab it, You know, I was thinking, too, with some of the stuff with Russia and China and Europe, you know, Russia and China might be able to take Europe. I doubt it. Even they would, it would probably just be a nasty, you know, draw war. China is developing good technology, but it's got a long ways to go to catch up with us. And actually, once the missile defense shield is deployed, it takes a lot of the threat of nuclear war out of the role. Not all of it, but a lot of it. It'll deal away with, instead of 10,000 missiles flying all over the place, maybe a couple of hundred or two, which is enough to wipe us out. But when all six tiers of missile defense shield is deployed, I don't know. Even then, I don't know if they're going to be able to get anything in. They might have to smuggle something, which is not beyond the realm of possibility. But Russia's got to remember that Europe has nukes, too. And they're much closer to to Europe than the United States is. So, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, is what you'll see there. I say we need a president to stand up to Putin and say, look, dude, you're going to have to stop your rampaging craziness. Vote for Glenn.
You know what, Joe? I don't think the missiles are going to hit USA. It would be an inside job, smuggling, like the suitcases, dirty bomb and all, that will attack the USA. Because everybody and their brother knows we'll have shields and all this to protect us from the air. But on the ground, it's hard to detect. So if we're going to get attacked, it's going to be inside the United States, maybe homegrown, or smuggled stuff that's going to hit us.
But see, that's what I think. I would fit they would, like, hit some facilities or somewhere where we have – radiation stored or something. I mean, there's only X amount of them now. There used to be a lot more of them, and they are shrinking. And they do have them, like, Yucca Mountain and the WIFF facility and a couple of the other ones. I had a friend that worked for the WIFF facility for a long time, and they store, you know, like, medical waste and stuff like that there. But, you know, these are places, if you hit them right, we cause damage. But more importantly than that, any airliner flown into a nuclear reactor, it would just be ridiculous. Look what the damn typhoon did at Fukushima. So I'm thinking if that happened here, I'm just grateful they don't think about stuff like that. And maybe it's because those plants are far enough off that they won't do the damage they want. Maybe you could evacuate fast enough. I don't know. I tell you what, I think it would leave as bad a taste as the Twin Towers left. I think a strike like that would even leave a worse taste because it would be, you know, nuclear in shape and form. Or even a dirty bomb. Could you see a dirty bomb released in New York? You would kill, well, probably millions.
Easy. That could happen.
Yeah, and that's well within the possibility of happening. You never know. And then, you know, then y'all got all the boroughs and all the suburbs over there and all. Anybody can sneak it in. There's so many people coming and going, you know, internationally into New York is what makes it tough. And you got all the Canadians coming down and stuff. They come through Maine and down into New York. It's just a lot of people coming through there, so it makes it harder. Still.
Joe, you didn't even invite me back into this conversation.
Yeah, I did. What are you talking about?
No, you didn't.
What are you talking about? I just said it as my co-host said a few minutes ago. What are you talking about?
I wasn't there. You didn't invite me back.
Well, welcome back.
Oh, you mean I'm sorry. I didn't see you fall off of Skype. I'm sorry. I
haven't been here for like 5 minutes.
I'm sorry. Pal Talk. I was wondering why you were so quiet. Pal Talk.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out either.
Yeah. I apologize.
Really, I just pulled back in. I mean, this guy does not want me to be airing for whatever reason.
No. This Pal Talk was over Skype. I had already set it over. I was reading the room.
If you turn on your camera, I would know what you would do. Then we can hold up the conversation. But your camera's off.
Lord have mercy. I mean, Joe's worried about
Move along now. Move along. You know the rule. You know the rule.
Uh-huh,
move along.
Uh-huh. All right, let's go. What are we talking about, people? Let's go.
Well, you know, the article that I was researching there, and I wanted the guys to just fill in. The New York Times with their brilliant comments while I look at this article. It was Washington Post earlier this week. House panel finds no intelligence failure in Benghazi attacks by Greg Miller, posted November 21st, Friday. An investigation, quoting directly, an investigation by the Republican-led House Intelligence Committee has concluded that the CIA and U.S. military responded appropriately to the attacks on U.S. facilities in Benghazi, Libya, in 2012. Dismissing allegations that the Obama administration blocked rescue attempts during the assault or sought to mislead the public afterward. After a two-year probe that involved the review of thousands of pages of classified documents, the panel determined that the attack could not be blamed on an intelligence failure, and that CIA security operatives ably and bravely assisted State Department officials who were overwhelmed at a nearby but separate diplomatic compound. Their committee also found no evidence that there was either a stand-down order or denial of available air support, rejecting claims to defend persisting conspiracy theories that the U.S. military was prevented from rescuing U.S. personnel from a nighttime assault that killed U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens and three other Americans, end quote, all these men being heroes. Quick comment. Do you think, I'm trying to wonder how I should coach this, or express this. Do you think that the Israelis probably would have been a little bit more, would have handled the matter differently? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they would have. Israelis, this kind of stuff, they're probably better suited or have dealt with, might be a better way of saying it. You know, U.S. intelligence does a lot of things, and we're smarter with a lot of things, but these are things that they deal with on a daily basis, and I do think that. And I think the administration, both the Republicans and the Democrats, have something to worry about now because the guy who was there was in charge of the troops down there said they had plenty of time to get there and that they were told to stand down. He wrote a book about it. So I don't know, the GOP may have stuck their own foot in their own butt here by not really investigating this more thoroughly. Because, you know, anyway it goes, Benghazi just for some reason weighs on Hillary Clinton. They don't really blame Obama for it. They blame Hillary. And to say there was no failures there is just a joke because, I mean, he had been asking for money and more equipment for a year. So there was definitely a failure there. I don't know why the GOP would take advantage of that, but I'm sure they got their reasons.
Sounds like they let her off the hook.
Yeah, it's well, because she stepped down. I think that's why. She stepped down from the office. I think that's the whole reason why they let her off the hook. She said, well, you know what, I'm not going to come back as Secretary of State. I'm going to leave. And I think that's the whole reason why. Because I was wondering why, in a second-term president, why your Secretary of State, like someone like Hillary, would step down, especially if she wanted to run for president, you know, unless she thought there was going to be a problem with the GOP or a problem with Obama, which could be either way. You know, so it's hard to say there. Oh, yeah. Well, what are you going to do? Seems like one of the things you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. What amazes me is how many, since Obama's been president, how many times the Secret Service got caught with prostitutes. Guys, get some real women. Damn, Todd.
That's really funny, Joe.
And $800 a night? I'm a, you know,
oh, that's
y'all,
that's
ladies, oh. Listen, ladies, y'all close y'all's ears for a minute, okay? Please close y'all's ears. I got to tell y'all something. I ain't never found none worth no $800 in there. Just saying, man. What the hell's going on here? What are y'all smoking down here? What are y'all on this stuff, man? Get the hell out of here. If you got to pay for it, shame on you. You that damn ugly? Especially in South America, you got to pay for it. And $800, look, from what my friends in South America say, $10 gets you all you want all day long, man. So what's
yeah, but that was Thailand. It was $5.
I don't like with. Patrice, do you like where your program is going? Stop this.
I thought they had your ears closed, Joe.
Gentlemen, or I'll use that loosely. Patrice, let's continue.
Well, talking about presidential races, you know, I had the article titled with me, but there was an interesting article about the Hillary's race there. Of course, she very much is planning to be a presidential contender, or won't assume, and they are mentioning Jeb Bush as a possible threat. They're even referencing Rand Paul and Elizabeth Warren as definitely a factor, but not as much a factor as Jeb Bush would be.
Well, I'm waiting to see where else is going to go. It's I don't know if Hillary can win anything. I'm not even sure she can win the primary. I mean, it's going to be a tough call. I think the Democrats got the same problem they did last time. Is she, as a woman, is she the right candidate to lead the party? And can she beat someone like Jeb Bush, especially if Jeb takes on like a Rand Paul or a Ted Cruz as a VP? I don't think she can. I think it's a waste of their time and money. And then they're going to start harping on things like she's going to make 70 when she takes over. She'd be 78 when she got out. They're going to start, you know, harping on things. Personally, I think that's the age a president should be. That's when you got some damn wisdom in your head. And you're not all swayed by all this emotional and crap that's going on around you. But, you know, young presidents have not been the best thing for this country, let's be honest about it. You know, Reagan was the last older president we had, and everybody loved him. Clinton, you know, was the first young one. She wasn't too bad, except he got caught with his wiki-wiki. And then the last two have just been disasters. So I'm kind of like, yeah, maybe we need to go back over to this a little bit here. Raise the age up to maybe 60 to be president. I think it's a good idea, frankly. But I got a question for everybody, because this was written to me by a gentleman the other day from one of the examiners. And he asked me if I thought... you know, I've talked about this many times, too, if I thought everyone in the country should be required to have military service. And I said, I don't think they should have to have military service, but I said, I think they should have military service to be considered a citizen. In other words, getting benefits. You can be an American and live in our country, but if you don't want to serve for 2 years, then you don't get benefits like Social Security and stuff like that, because there is an advantage to having everybody serve at least 2 years. One, it kind of gives everybody an understanding of some aspects of the country that they wouldn't normally get anyway. A lot of times it's going to give you free education, but more important for young people, it's going to give them the opportunity to kind of explore and see what they really want to get into. After 2 years in the military, some might want to stay. Some may have better ideas about what lines of college they want to take and things like that. And I really think it would be a better approach for our country. And besides that, then instead of having a million-man trained army, you have, well, a 200-million-man trained army. It's a big difference. Most people aren't even going to want to even go after a country with that many soldiers. They're like, no, 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 we'll leave y'all alone now. Thank you very much. But it's more than that, though. I think it has more to do with the states of technology and the states of mind. The military, if you take away the killing, has a lot of good points. You know, camaraderie, teamwork, advanced technologies, advanced skills, learning how to multitask an array of stresses. It's just the killing part that makes it bad. So I'm just saying. And for most people who serve are not going to see that. I serve. Most of my friends serve. None of them seen any real action at all. The people serving in the last 20 years, some of them did, but the majority of the military didn't. We don't have millions of troops overseas. We've got a few thousand, a few hundred thousand. At the height, we had a couple of, 250,000 or something. So we didn't even have hardly that much of our force over there. Right? It's just, you got to wonder sometimes.
You see, all that mess started during the Vietnam War with the draft. And, you know, either you went to college, you got out of college and got drafted. Or you got drafted out of high school. Or if you quit high school, you got drafted, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then you went right to Vietnam. Did not pass gov or 200 hours.
Yeah, it's funny.
And we were really, tell you the truth, we were untrained completely because all they did was push us through 8 weeks of boot camp, 4 weeks of ITR, that's infantry training with different weapons, and right to Vietnam. You had to learn yourself out there in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you said that about Vietnam, though, Cop, because the other day McCain got on TV and said that he felt the way Obama was handling ISIS was the paramount to another Vietnam.
That's right. I agree with what McCain said. It's just building up. It's going to be a long, drag-out thing.
I don't know. It worries me. It worries me to where I'm seeing my country head. It worries me about a lot of things. It worries me what Russia's up to and what they're doing. The world's a very unstable place right now. You know, and it was getting kind of... Yeah, I guess I was like the rest
I guess
of
another stuff. Thing, Joe, and Therese and Steph, think about this. All right, we go and defeat Iris, okay? As soon as we get done defeating them, somewhere along the line, another organization's going to pop up there and be something else. Worse than Iris, then you have to go back and defeat them. And when you do that, another organization. That's what's going to happen. You already defeated Al-Qaeda in a way. Now Iris. And then you defeat them, another group's going to build up. And then it's just going to keep on going down the line. Wait and see what I say. It's going to happen. You know, there's one thing after another. One group after another group and another group.
That's because we won't finish the damn job. You know, I said this when they made us pull out with Daddy Bush. Finish the job or we're going to be back in 8 or 9 years. Sure enough, man, we didn't finish the job. Baby Bush went back. And then they forced Baby Bush out with all of that, you know, a lot of that getting out. But Baby still managed to keep himself in there. But then Obama, right smack in the middle of it, pulls out prematurely. And every time we do it, it's another disaster. We have to finish the job. And really, I got to say, I'm tired of giving territory back after we lose American lives. To me, at this point, I say, okay, we're going to come save your ass, but you're going to become a commonwealth now, and that's just how it's going to be. And if you can't deal with it, well, you'll either go to jail, get killed, until we finally get your ass under control like we've been doing. Let me tell you something. If we can tame the Wild West and the Indians, we can tame the Muslims. All right? We just got to be willing to do it. This is bullshit, just like the Christians had to be tamed. Everybody forgot the Christians was another radical, crazy-ass group rampaging across, killing, murdering, Inquisition, and come on, man. I don't think the Muslims still got anything on the Christians, to be honest with you. Except, you know, for maybe the Twin Towers, I still don't think they've caught up with them yet. So it's a matter of taming a group, but if you just go fester around in the cut, it just gets worse. We just need to finish the job for a change. Make sure the governments are stable. Make sure they're friendly American governments. Or, like I said, I really think we should just keep the territories. Because think about this, ladies and gentlemen. If we'd have kept the territories after World War II that we acquired, we'd had almost half the world. I think it was like 42% or 44% would have belonged to the United States. With other acquisitions and a few other things going on there, we would have ended up right now, we would own about 52 or 53% of the world. If the EU would have joined in with us along with our fellow American allies, we'd own almost 72% of the world. That gives you almost complete control. That means the rest of the countries would fall in eventually. We've got to unite the planet, guys. I'm sorry to say, but we've got to become Terrans and not Americans and Russians. We just got to do it. And we got to do it in a free state.
And we have global threats that ISIS represents a severe global threat. Even in the Daily Mail, the dailymail.co.uk site, and it's Sunday, November 23rd. Well, it's Sunday there now at this time. It's the 22nd here, but it's already Sunday there. The article is entitled, ISIS Release Shocking New Video of Child Soldiers from Kazakhstan Being Trained with AK-47s. Just two bullets here. New ISIS propaganda video shows young children training with firearms. The video claims the children are first being taught to read and write Arabic, and then just scrolling down here, let me see, and then, well, I can't, there are too many ads popping up, then the children are being taught to use weaponry. You know, there is a global Islamic caliphate threat now, and the world citizens have to realize it and respond to it.
There is, I say we send Stephanie over there to line out ISIS. I don't think they really got hold of their asses.
Yeah, someone has.
Oh, wait, speaking of that, no, wait, you know what? That made me think about something that I wanted to talk about, which really, really pissed me off. This tells me something about Muslims I really don't like. So I'm watching this clip today. I think it was on America One or, I don't know, BBC One of them. So this woman got raped, and she's pregnant, right? The guy got acquitted, got off, whatever they did. So she's out there getting like 150 lashes in public because she got raped. I'm thinking somebody needs to take that cane and shove it somewhere the sun don't shine. I mean, what kind of bullshit do you know, look, sometimes you just got to wonder about stuff, and that's one of the things. That's why I said the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth shit never works. That's one of the sets of laws.
No, but really, in that case, it would, Joe.
Why? The guy who raped him got off, and she's getting caned.
And why?
Because she got raped. How's that working?
Right.
Well, the guy who committed the crime got away. The victim's getting beat.
Right. Now, how does I... But like, wait, what are you talking about here? It's disturbing.
Well, you know, Ashley, these comments really... I hope this isn't a shameless plug. Remember that interview we had on Global Newsmaker Focus probably about 6 weeks ago? With Colonel Richard Hobbs. That was one interesting interview. And he was mentioning, too, more or less the extremist, and I'm paraphrasing, the extreme dysfunction of Islam, the basic Islamic concepts, and really the horrible place that women are placed under the Quran, the Quranic principles. It's absolutely, it's untenable. Should be to any citizen of Earth.
Wait, Glenn, are you still there, or Cop, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Damn headset.
All right, what's your opinion?
You got to reword the question again, because I had a little breakup on my phone.
Patrice, go ahead.
Well, do you think that the fact that the Islamic principles, as expressed in the Quran, the Hadith, other... tenets of Islam, other material in Islam, just present such a horrible base for promoting women and for even just promoting any type of proper human rights will always result in these horrible atrocities against women.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree too, yeah, because... that they're making their own rules up on the Quran and all that. I mean, you know, they should just take that Quran and the people just take them out. You know, it's hurting too many people.
But, you know, I was thinking about that. You know, the Christians were pretty harsh. You know, women couldn't do anything until just recently. I mean, anything. They were second-class citizens. You were allowed. Even now, still in Louisiana and in New York, they've got blue book laws that on Sundays you can take your wife out as long as it's the strap you beat her with. is more than 4 inches wide, it doesn't leave a bruise, and you can give it 30 lashings. That's actually
on the books.
It's a law, people. It's a law. I've been thinking about that because, you know, I know some people could use a good lashing. So, but it's amazing to me that you would still see in the year 2014 that these laws could actually still be on the books. And they couldn't be enforced. But come on. How can that shit still be on the books?
So
but it shows you what our mentality was 100 years ago. It really shows
you. It's so stupid. I can't even make any sense of what you just said. So funny. No, I'm just sitting here with my feet up, really relaxing now. Like, really funny, Joe. Get the hell out of here. Get a lashing from whatever. And I told this story in the past of this Japanese couple, and I watched this woman, and she walks, I'd say, like, 10 feet behind her husband, up the block, down the block, whatever, and I want to punch her in the face.
5 steps behind, girl. That's how it is.
I want to slap her for being so stupid, to being that, like, subservient. Like, get the hell out of here. Like, where are we living?
I don't like that.
Well, evidently, she must, but really, like, I'm going to take a video next time I see it.
It's so inappropriate. It's so inappropriate.
I know.
Well, I could tell you something common. On the Native American reservations, when a man and a woman's walking, especially the Apache Rez, the man walks in front of the woman and she's behind the woman. The only reason for that is he's protecting her from any, you know, outside doing.
Well, that's a nice take.
Okay, this is the way they operate. Now, the woman is only about 2 feet behind the man. Now, when you look at the white people today, you know, walking side by side, man and woman. But on Indian reservations, that's the way they do that. It's only for protection. That's it. You know? Now, look at the Mideast. You know, the women's what? What did you say? 10 feet behind a man. You know? For what? What's the reason 10 feet?
I know.
One of them crazy things.
Yeah.
No practical reason. Well, you know, Carl, I'd like to ask your advice on something, particularly now where I'm living in Arizona. That's where my principal residence now is located. I work with and speak with many people of Native American ancestry. I'm beginning to recognize the different facial traits, features of the different tribes. Would it be considered impolite for me to ask, you know, which Native American tribe were your ancestors from, or is that considered impolite?
Now, the best thing you do, if you know where they're from, let's suppose you dealt with a Hopi, and you say, "Are you Hopi?" and they'll say, "Yes, ma'am," or whatever, then you could say, I guess all your relatives are Hopi. Where do they come from? I can tell you where they came from. Because I give a show every Wednesday at 4 p.m. at Pow Talk News called The First Nations.
Mm-hmm.
40,000 years ago, there was a migration across the Bering Straits. There were three waves. They crossed from Tibet, Mongolia, and I forget the other country. They came across. They came through Canada and came down. As they came down, they went different areas, southward to Arizona, Texas, even all the way down to Central America and Mexico. They scattered through. But it all originated from two women 40,000 years ago. Now, their ancestors came from the migration. As they separated and went different groups, they got a name. Let's say the Apache, or the Hopi, or the Navajo. Well, when you break it all down, two-thirds of the Native American tribes originated from the waves. The East Coast tribes, they do not know yet where they originated. My tribe never migrated. The Cherokee never migrated. But They did find evidence way up in Newfoundland. So you can ask, let's say, a Hopi or anybody about ancestors. You can say, well, my ancestors is this. Where's your ancestors? They might say, from Arizona. Because they've been around for 30,000 years. My tribe's been around 35,000. The Cherokee, 40,000. So they might give you some information, you know. So it's not impolite to ask. You just say, I'd like to learn. And they'll gladly. The people you want to talk to is the elders. Okay? The elders is more willing to teach you questions about their people because they're proud of them. And that's the way to go.
I got to say, I wish I would spend more time. I wish I'd spend more time, you know. Ever since I found, I always knew I had Cherokee. I just never knew how much until, you know, I was older. But, and I always wondered why my grandma, because she was half Cherokee, half Irish. God, she had a temper from hell, man. Great woman. Boy, she had a temper from hell. And I didn't find out, I knew she was Indian. I didn't know what Indian, I didn't find out what tribe until about a decade ago. And maybe it might have been a little bit longer than that ago, but that's when I found out. And then I went ahead and applied for my card because I'm 1/8 Cherokee. And but I've never really went up and spent any real time up there. I've been to some other Indian reservations and spent some time. I just haven't been up there, which I really should go. You know,
let me explain something about the Cherokee, Joe, to you.
Yeah, please.
The Cherokee people, even if you have 1% blood in you, you are recognized as a Native American First Nation people. They go by the blood. Okay? You can suppose you're Navajo, part Navajo. They're going to ask you, well, where's your grandparents and all this? They'll go by who you are, but what's in your heart. Every tribe has something different. But the Cherokee people is the only one will recognize and honor one drop of blood. That's all you need to be with them. So you can just say 1/8. Okay, well, we Native Americans don't say, I got 1/8. Well, how do you know you got 1/8? They don't go by that. They just go by your ancestors and one drop of blood on the Cherokee. My people are the Calusa Nation. But since they're no longer around, I'm adopted into Lakota in Pine Ridge. So I'm honored there to have a Lakota name there. But yet my ancestors are Calusa Nation. So I have Indian blood all the way around it. So this is how they operate. All my teaching I do on Pow Talk News Network on Wednesday at 4 o'clock, I've been teaching different things from DNA to different things. They just found out something just recently that the Lost Tribe, there's two tribes up in North Carolina. One's a boundary. It's a sovereign nation. And they don't have to go by any rules of the United States at all. It's on the border between North Carolina and South Carolina. It's up in the mountains. And it's called Quala, Q-U-A-L-L-A. And it's a tribe there. It's all Cherokee. But the Cherokee on the eastern side, and there's Cherokee in Oklahoma. But they were all one at one time until... You know, they got forced out. So it does get a little interesting. This thing can go on and on. But, Trees, on your thing there, as an elder, they'll be honored to tell you all the information. And just have plenty of time, and they'll tell you the whole story.
That's very helpful advice. And, you know, Cobb, I'd love to have you on my show as a guest discussing that topic. And maybe I'll ask some of my friends, too, if they might want to call in. You know, because it looks, I don't know, in my ignorance, I really see about three of them as representing different tribes. It's fascinating. It really is. And I'm trying to just kind of mentally say, gee, which tribe are they a member of? So I think that's fascinating. Very helpful.
I'll bring in my couple other friends, too, on your show. One is Black Hawk. He's a shaman. A Cherokee shaman, and Quala Cherokee. He's from the Lost Tribe. And yes, Joe, did you apply for your BIA card, your card? If not, go get it. Because you got benefits coming. And if I was you, get it and go get the benefits.
Yeah, because I was told I had X amount of cash coming and stuff. I told them, well, I donated back to the tribe. But it's, there's some other benefits, though, besides that. So I really have. I've been wanting to go spend some time. I really haven't had the free time to go out there. I'd like to go spend like a month just hanging out and, you know, just learn some of the more never mind, I can't speak to anyone.
Yeah, when you're ready, Joe, I'll set you up.
Yeah, we're toast. We've been talking for 5 hours.
Oh, man, it's time for us to go anyway. I didn't
even
realize.
7 hours.
That.
What hours?
We only got started, Steph. We got another 4 to go.
Oh, God.
In the old days, I got to tell y'all, in the old days, and you can ask Trees about this, in the old days, we'd even open up the chat room after this. Talking to the morning to the hour. I'm not kidding you. Sometimes 3-4 o'clock in the morning, man, having all kind of discussions. Now I'm old, though. My body's like, go to bed.
Well, you know what? I'm nocturnal, so I could stay up all night long. Joe, you know that.
You're just a hootie.
Well, see, ever since I worked night work in the police department, I'm a night owl.
Nice.
When I was young, I used to...
Joe never has anything nice to say
about
me.
I called you a hootie. That means you're a good thing. I didn't call you like a
little hawk. I don't know what the F that means. Is that some...
Oh, my God. What a
hootie is an owl. As in an owl, correct?
As a nocturnal, all night long.
All right.
Oh, Lord.
I love this panel. I want to remind our audience and our panel members, of course, Stephanie Benetti, Joe Montaldo, co-host of News on the Flip Side and News on the Flip Side Light, respectively, on Saturday and Wednesday evenings. Saturday and Thursday evenings. And also we have Cop, a wonderful New Jersey policeman, who's really very much cognizant of all things religious and Native American tradition, and a wonderful public servant there as a policeman in New Jersey, and Glenn, a wonderful scientist and entrepreneur from Oklahoma. It has been such a treat to speak with you people. I hope you'll return.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And when you're ready, Trees, before that stuff for Native Americans, let me know. And I bring everything, all the information.
Oh, I'd be honored. That'd be a great pleasure. Thank you.
Anytime, Trish.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
So enjoy chatting.
Let me say.
Shoot me over a title when you get a chance.
It's UPRN 107.7 FM, New Orleans. It's United Public Radio. Thank you for joining us tonight. Extended News on the Flip Side to Global Newsmaker Focus. Awesome. Thank you, Trees. I'll speak.
Thank you.
You guys next week.
Just OCD got her good.
Why did you say that?
Because you had the industry.
UFO. Views and opinions of any of the guests of After Hours AM are not necessarily the views and opinions of After Hours AM, its hosts, its staff, or any of its affiliates.